You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Tamara here, and today we have a fantastic interview. I am so excited. We're going to dig right into it, but before I do that, let's give him an introduction. You probably know who he is, but just in case you happen to crawl out from a rock, which can happen to some of us, we can go into hibernation, I am here with Neil Patel. He is the co-founder of Crazy Egg, Hello Bar, which is one of my favorite tools, and Kissmetrics. He helps companies like Amazon, NBC, GM, HP, and Viacom grow their revenues. So I'm pretty sure if he can do it for them, he's going to help us today. The Wall Street Journal calls him a top influencer on the web, and Entrepreneur magazine says he created one of the 100 most brilliant companies in the world. He was recognized as a top 100 entrepreneur by the age of 30 by President Obama, and one of the top 100 entrepreneurs under the age of 35 by the United Nations. Wow. He's also been awarded the congressional recognition from the United States House of Representatives. So, Neil, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So, I like to actually start with a question that gets the roundtable into more of an open mind frame to listen and get some new ideas. So, I'm going to ask you this one to start with. What's the one thing you're glad you didn't know when you started your entrepreneurial journey?
How hard it was. Because if I thought it was that hard at the beginning and it takes so many years for me to succeed, I probably wouldn't have started.
So what do you think makes it hard?
Just everything, right? You have to learn. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. You probably have a lack of financial capital, right? There's probably even a lack of time, lack of experience, and you have to learn stuff as you go. It's just a lot of stuff is thrown at you all at once.
Yeah, and let's not forget the the emotional roller coaster that comes along with it.
That's correct.
So, you know, entrepreneur is kind of a big title. I think a lot of people use it. So here's what I want to ask you. If someone asked you who you are, what you do, but you couldn't use the word entrepreneur, how would you describe yourself?
Yeah, I usually just tell people I'm a web surfer. It keeps it simple because they don't ask me any more questions. But what I usually say is if you're going to say, hey, what are you doing if you're not a real entrepreneur? I just typically tell people I'm a marketer.
Okay.
I'm driving traffic to websites, right?
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about, share with us your journey, kind of where you've come from and where you are now.
Sure. I started off in Orange County, California. I now live in Las Vegas. I've moved around quite a bit. As a kid, when I was growing up in Orange County, I wanted to find a job. I couldn't find a job. I was on Monster.com, and I noticed that they're a publicly traded company. I clicked on their stock symbol, realized they make hundreds of millions of dollars a year. I decided to copy them, because if I create a copycat and I make 1%, I'll be rich. My copycat sucked. It didn't make any money because, one, I didn't know how to accept credit cards online, and two, no one came to my site. I thought, you start a business, people come to your site. I spent money hiring marketing firms, lost all my cash, I had to learn how to do it on my own, and eventually from there, I got pretty good at it. Good enough where I was able to pick up the phone, cold call, and tell other companies, hey, I'll drive you traffic. If I drive you traffic, pay me. If I don't pay me. And the risk was all on mine. So I started doing stuff like that, built up the business, and I realized consulting wasn't scalable. So eventually I got into software, right? And that's how my journey with Crazy Egg, Kissmetrics, Hello Bar all started.
So I want to back up and ask you something you said that I think is pretty important for people to hear, which is you were saying to people, you can pay me if I get you real results. But that was kind of ahead of the game of kind of click-through marketing and all that. So what made you realize that was the path to take, and how did you jump off that ledge? Because I do think that that's scary for a lot of people to put their self and their work on the line like that.
Yeah, I was 16 years old. I didn't have anything to lose.
Being 16 is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, like, I was like, if I make money, I have money. If I don't,
if I don't, I can't even drink yet, so what?
Yeah, there's not much else to do in life, so I was like, all right.
That's great. So you've made a lot of money, and you've launched several businesses. What was your idea of success when you started, and how has that changed?
I thought success when I first started was if you could make $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about things like taxes and stuff at the time because I was a little kid. But it's a change in which, you know, money is not the main primary driver of working anymore. I now work because I want to work. I want to help other people. Like, I enjoy seeing businesses grow. Mm-hmm. I enjoy seeing entrepreneurs succeed. I don't care if there's any financial reward. Sure, I got to pay the bills. But I didn't really think of much else, so.
Do you think that stemmed from not having to worry about finances? And that's just, I guess, rolls into my second question in here, which is, if you're a starting out entrepreneur and you want to be, you want success to be more than just money, because I do think that can be a little bit empty at times. I think we've all been there, and it feels great to get the check, but it also feels better, I think, when you're helping someone. So how would you help someone starting out frame that idea of success when you kind of need both?
So when people start out, I don't try to tell them, hey, here's success, or here's how you should frame it. I tell people, look, if you want to build a business, you need to solve a problem and help other people. Money is a side effect, right? Yeah. Google isn't this big because they went out there and said, we want to become rich, right? If you can solve a problem and you can do it well and it's your solution's easy to use, in my eyes, you've become successful because you've impacted a lot of people and you've made their lives easier. And that's really it, right? And money, again, is a side effect. If you really are truly successful and you create a great product or service, typically you'll see money come with it.
You said something really important, which I hope that the roundtable really picks up on or writes down, which is you got to solve a need or a problem, and then the money becomes a side effect of that. So my question to you is, you've built these great businesses, Hello Bar being one of them, which I love because I think that it makes capturing, you know, emails really easy without the fear of all the technology that you might have to go down. So that's a big need right there for me as an entrepreneur. But how do you figure out, hey, I see this need, I see this challenge, that is worth me pursuing and turning into a business?
Yeah, so if enough people feel that pain or issue, and I'm passionate about it, that's when I'm like, hey, this should actually turn into a real business.
So in a podcast interview I listened to you a while back on, you talked about the importance of focus for success and focusing on the right things. How do you figure out what to focus on and what to tune out?
I don't focus enough. That's actually one of my downfalls. So, what I do is I hire really talented people who are smarter than me, and that allows me to do multiple things. But I actually truly do focus most of my time on just the marketing angle, driving traffic to all our businesses. Like, if I had to nail down what I do, that's all I really do, and answer emails.
I think there's a myth out there, and I hear this a lot from the inventors that come across my desk, that, you know, taking the time to understand customers and human behavior is something that's for the brick-and-mortar world, for the real world. But I'm guessing that there's a behavior to how we act online, too. And I would just love to get your perspective on that.
It's actually very similar. Humans are humans, right?
Yeah.
When they interact offline, they're very similar patterns online as well. Sure, it's all digital, but user personas or buyer personas, psychology, it all plays into how people convert, behave, what they do online, etc. And understanding a user is very important. Online businesses need to. If they don't, they're never going to be that big.
So can you help give us some insights on how you figure out that customer behavior online?
A lot of surveying and data pulling, right? So you have to just talk with people. You have to figure out who your ideal customer is, right? So, and if you can keep getting insights from people, eventually you'll figure out, all right, these are my ideal customers. So for example, with Crazy Egg, we thought marketers and designers are our customers. Then we ended up learning that, hey, majority of the customers that use us are marketers. Yeah, 30%+ were designers and business owners, but we decided to focus, and by focusing purely on marketers, it actually helped us boost our revenue, because then our messaging was clearer and was more targeted around people who just do marketing.
Have you ever gone into, and it sounds a little bit like this is an example of that, but maybe another example where you've assumed your customer acted or was a certain way online, but found out through gathering data that it was not true or the opposite was true?
That's correct. So I assumed with, like, even Crazy Egg, that when we started the business, that people would come and they would run, you know, like a heat map or a Confetti Report or a school map, and then they would make changes to their website, and they would keep using it and improving. We quickly learned they don't behave like that. People are inherently lazy. They ran Speed Map, and they wouldn't make any changes.
Right.
So we had to continually adjust the products and the email campaigns, et cetera, to try to get users more engaged and try to get them to actually make changes to their site. But we had to go through a lot of learning to get there, right? Our assumptions were very off.
I love it. Humans are we are lazy, aren't we?
Even I'm lazy, right?
I'm lazy, too. It's quite all right. But it sounds like what you're saying is it's a combination of understanding the analytics and the metrics and gathering of data.
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
Will you talk a little bit, so you have a real command of analytics. It's one of the things I've always been really impressed by with you. I think you call yourself an analytic junkie. You even have a business called Kissmetrics. It's around analytics. How do you think about analytics and why are they so important?
So people like making decisions based off their gut, and sure, sometimes their gut could be right, and opinions, but I realized that, hey, the best way to make decisions is based off of data, qualitative and quantitative, and that's why I got into the analytics business, because I was tired of opinions.
How long do you think it takes to really have enough data to make a decision, or does that depend on what you're deciding about?
It really depends. It varies a lot.
So you're a master at getting traffic to your sites. What are the top three tips that the rest of us can implement pretty quickly to get tons more traffic?
Yeah, a few things. One, content marketing. A lot of people don't really use it. It works extremely well, in which if you provide educational information, whether it's consumer-based or business-based, people will eventually read your site. They may not convert right away, but they'll read your information, assuming your information is so thorough, so detailed that they read it and they're like, okay, cool, I can go and actually implement something based off this or learn from this, and it actually impacts their life for their business. That's good content. People will share it, link to it, etc., help score your brand. Eventually, people keep coming back to your blog and they'll be like, wow, the content's so great. Let me check out the company. What are products or services do they have to offer, right? Number two, paid ads. Everyone talks about how, like, oh, it's expensive, you shouldn't do it, even startups. They should consider it. Mm-hmm. Why? Because in many cases, you can actually make paid ads very profitable, and you pay your credit card bill net 30. And you can spend small amounts, like a few hundred bucks, to actually figure out if paid advertising has a chance to work or if it won't work at all. Right?
Yep.
Third tip is really analyze your consumers and start running A/B tests. So understand the personas, what users like, what they don't, and adjust the messaging on the website so you can maximize sales.
I want to go back and ask a question about the paid ads, because that's something I hear a lot of rumblings about from people of, well, I spent $5,000, but I don't really know what I got for it. What do you think is the key to making an ad profitable for you?
Have conversion tracking and goal tracking set up, which you can do in Google Analytics, because then you can figure out, hey, I spent X dollars, and here's how much revenue I ended up getting from it.
Yeah. Pretty simple, right? Just know what you paid and know what you get.
Yeah.
So once you have subscribers, what's the optimal way to keep them?
The optimal way to keep subscribers are, if I were, like someone who has a business, is not just saying, hey, I'm going to create a good product or service. That's one thing, and you should continually improve it. But it's actually learning from your customers. Mm. So it's always harder to get new customers than it is to keep existing ones. So you should be focusing HackRackers on keeping existing customers. And you got to truly understand, like, here's, what issues they have, such as crazy. Like, hey, people are canceling because they're running heat maps. They know that they need to make changes, but no one is. So, all right, how can we actually help them make the changes? How can we adjust the product? How can we give them advice, et cetera, right? How can we make the support team help out, reach out to them, whatever it may be. It's all about learning from your users, because if you can actually learn the pain points they have in the business and you can really help them solve it, they're going to keep paying a much longer period of time.
You know what? I think that's so important that I just want to take a deep breath to the roundtable and say, don't be afraid to ask for feedback and get input and pay attention to what they're doing all the time. I will tell you, we have an open dialogue with our Shook community, and I love it because they're always telling us how to improve. They give us the answers half the time. Don't you find that?
Yeah, I really do, right? Like, your customers will give you the answers you need. And people are just too afraid to ask them. It's like, why not? Why wouldn't they want to give you answers? Because it makes their experience better.
Right, and I think if you frame it that way, too, they're even more willing. And, you know, I got some criticism recently, and I called the person and thanked them because it helped us create a better product, and you got to listen to that. And it's funny, I do find a lot of inventors and entrepreneurs afraid of feedback. I think because you got to really take a step back and look at what you're doing.
That's correct. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, so don't be afraid. So I heard you say once in a podcast I was listening to that you shouldn't write a 500-word blog post, that you want to do more like 2,000 words. And that just kind of blew my mind because I was like, oh, man, 2,000 words. What's that about?
Yeah, so there was – I forgot the company who ended up doing this, but they ended up doing some research, right, into the web pages that rank on page one of Google. What they quickly ended up learning was – web pages that have 2,000-plus words of content tend to rank on page one on average.
Huh.
So what I ended up getting from that was, hey, if you write more content, assuming it's good content, you'll typically rank better. Reason being is not because of the word count. It's because you're providing more depth. You're providing more value to the user. They're more likely to share it, et cetera, right? Versus if you just wrote a thin piece of content.
Oh. So maybe, too, I think layering onto what you're saying, it sounds like if I'm going to bother to read 2,000 words, I probably care and connected to you a little bit better, and I'm probably more willing to share because I'm more invested, I guess.
That's correct.
Huh. Well, I guess I'm going to have to expand my blog post. You know, it's funny. Sometimes you hear those things, I call it the current, right, where everybody kind of has this one perception of, you know, podcasts can only be 15 minutes and blog posts need to be 500 words because nobody's paying attention.
That's correct, right? And, like, I disagree with that, and I'm on the same way with you, in which podcasts can be as long as you want, so
yeah.
The quality is good.
Yeah,
blogging, right? It could be as detailed as you want. Some of my blog posts on neilpatel.com are, like, 8,000 words.
Wow. Well, I know that. I mean, I've read blog posts of yours where I've sat and actually read it, you know, like I'm reading an article, and it just goes to show you, and for me, you know, like with a podcast, it really depends on how much time the person has to give me and how much content I can squeeze out of them.
That's correct, yeah.
and my favorite podcasts are usually an hour and a half long, funny enough. They're not the 20-minute ones, so you just, those rules are kind of funny how people say that. I want to ask you actually about an email that I got from you, which I thought was so freaking brilliant. So I signed up on your neilpatel.com page. And I got an email from you with an image with my name in it.
Yeah.
And a personal letter. And I just thought, oh my God, he's speaking to me.
I'm a pretty creative marketer.
Yeah. So will you talk a little bit about and give some insight into kind of the you know, I don't want to pull back the curtain too much for you, but, you know, the strategy behind those types of emails and how you think about your communication with your audience.
It converts really well.
I bet it does.
So the way I see it is I try to think outside the box and create a personalized connection with my readers. That's all I'm trying to do.
So smart. So I would say, listeners, go to neilpatel.com and sign up because I think, first of all, the content's great, but second, you'll be blown away by the first email you get, which I think is pretty hard to do in a jaded world in a, you know, inbox full of emails from people.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was great. I opened it up even bigger on my mobile phone. I was like, is that really my name? It's funny, right? But those are the things that sticks with you, and it goes to show you how important being innovative in all of your communication, how important that really is.
Yeah, most people don't do it, but it really does work. So I'm like, why not, right?
Yeah, yeah. And if it converts, then fantastic.
Yeah, it converts really well.
Yeah. So you wrote a blog post in Forbes recently about how not to become an outdated marketer. So this is kind of a two-part question. First, I wanted to ask you, what are the biggest changes you're seeing that marketers need to pay attention? And then what's your advice for what to do about it?
The biggest change I'm actually seeing right now is the world is in marketing is going towards personalization. Mm. Everything, websites. Just wait, give it a few years. People have different websites for people who come from Facebook versus Twitter versus LinkedIn versus Google, etc., right?
Mm-hmm.
And to really stay up to date, you have to keep learning new techniques, trends, and stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Do you think it'll just continue to have this fast-paced change? Do you think that's just where we are and where we'll always be?
Yeah, I think the changes are going to get faster and more drastic.
Yeah. Well, the personalization is an important point. I mean, I do think we've come to expect that marketing of one to talk to me directly, what I like and what I'm about.
I'm totally with you on that, right? So I think it's going to go like that. It's just time.
Yeah. All right, so I want to end with the, I call it the questions with impact round. The point here is to be concise. So I have about 5 or 6 questions to get through with you to end it up. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay, so the first one is, what does your morning routine look like?
Check emails, brush, shower, eat, meetings, phone calls, work.
Showering is an important part of the morning, I've come to find out.
Yes.
What's the one thing you do to turn the beat around? You know, when things aren't going the way you want them to.
I just don't give up. I just keep at it.
Awesome. Persistence matters, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. Do you think, I'm going to go off track a little bit here and ask about that. How long do you think it takes for an entrepreneur to finally be able to look back and go, this is or isn't working, just overall?
There's no exact answer, right? Sometimes it takes companies years and a lot of pivots before they figure it out.
Yeah.
It's just up to the entrepreneur if they want to keep at it.
The key there, though, is the word you said, which is pivot. I'm a big fan of that. I don't like failure and success. I think at every point you learn and you pivot and you change, and eventually you get the right place, and it probably looks nothing like where you started.
Yep. All my businesses end up in a different place than what I expected.
Yeah, right. Sometimes the vision's the same, but how you get there totally changes.
Yep.
So I'm a big believer in stalking people who I think are doing innovative things. I like to listen to their podcasts and read their articles, and I subscribe to their newsletters. That's how I found you. I was stalking you. I promise it's not awkward. Don't worry. I won't show up in your garbage. Who's one person that you think the Innovation Roundtable should be stalking out there that's doing amazing things?
Elon Musk.
And I know this is going to sound like a really obvious question, but what about him intrigues you?
It's probably not the best way to say this, but he just has big balls.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah, he just does whatever it takes to succeed. He doesn't care what people think, and he has, like, the craziest ideas.
Yeah. I love his visions are so big and so bold, it almost takes you a second to wrap your head around them.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. What are the 3 actions the roundtable should take immediately after listening to this interview?
Go out there and just keep trying to grow your business. Look for the low-hanging fruit. And try to just solve those things with your business. 2, break up your goals for your business into bite-sized daily tasks. Because if you do monthly or quarterly goals, you're less likely to hit them versus if you break them down on a daily basis. And then 3, learn from other people's mistakes. There's a lot of entrepreneurs out there. They've all made mistakes. Learn from them and try to avoid making those mistakes.
Yeah, why make the same mistake twice? It doesn't have to be your mistake twice, but you'll make it twice.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that. I want to go back to the bite size. Can you give me an example of that for you, how you broke something down to more bite size and manageable?
So if the goal is increasing revenue, one of the levers is conversion optimization. So we're like, all right, when we run tests, typically, you know, 2 out of every 4 tests succeed. So like, all right, how many tests do we have to run? That means we have to run like 6 tests. Mm. And then from there, we're like, what would the test be? Okay, here are the 6 tests. All right, let's run the test, and hopefully we can get them all done within X time frame, and let's crank them out, right?
Yep.
And here's what we need to do to get each test up and running.
So it's really about the actions, not just the goals.
Uh-huh.
Love it. Do you find that when people focus too much on goals, it just gets overwhelming and they don't get anything done?
Yes.
Why do you think that is?
Because they're not willing to be in the gutter, right? It's like, you think too much about strategy, especially for a smaller business, you're never going to implement.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and they said, well, I've got this great sales plan. I said, great. Are you out there talking to people? They're like, no. I've got a plan for someone else to implement. I was like, well, good luck.
Yeah. That person's not going to succeed.
Well, no. Don't you think that you really have to be a salesperson to be an entrepreneur?
You don't have to. I know a lot of entrepreneurs who suck at sales, but...
But they're out there doing it, aren't they?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. Engineers do really well, right? A lot of them suck at sales.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mean like you have to be a salesperson like, you know, you sell a car. I mean more like you have to be willing to get out there and talk it.
Yes.
Okay, what should everyone listening know about you and how you do it that helps you succeed?
I'm just persistent, right? We talked about this earlier. I never really give up. I just keep at it. And that has helped me succeed over the years.
So the final question is, I want to know the one thing that people would be surprised to learn about you. We do this at the end of every episode. I share something, then I ask the guest to share something. So for me, I think the thing that would surprise people to know about me is that I once bungee jumped off an abandoned bridge because I saw a cardboard sign on the side of the road that said bungee jumping. And that seemed,
cool.
Yeah, it seemed like a good idea at the time. So what's the one thing people would be surprised to know about you?
I'm really OCD. Like, I won't go to the airport and take off. Like, if they make me take off my shoes, I have booties to put around my socks. My socks are dirty.
Has that gotten worse over time with more travel, or has that always been the case?
It's gotten worse and worse. I'm, like, super OCD about everything. Like, my toothpaste has to be rolled up a certain way. I have, like, in Vegas, where I live at home, yeah. I have, like, a housekeeper. She lint rolls my bed for me every day because, like, I don't want hair on my pillowcases and stuff. Like, I'm that OCD. And the funny part is I'm bald. Like, my head's shaved. Like, so I'm, like, that OCD, right? And, like, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
There's some worse.
I used to date a guy when I lived in New York City that he had to use a different... So I had to use a different towel every day after a shower.
I use a different towel. I really want to
I love it. It used to crack me up, and then I got used to it. So I was like, yeah, it's a nice hot towel every day, so it sounds good to me.
Uh-huh.
That's great.
I
used
a towel every day, because then it was like dirt got on the towel. I wanted to be clean.
So I have family in Vegas, so I'm out there often, but it's dusty, so that must be a little hard with the OCD.
Not where I live.
All right. Last thing before we go is, where do you want people to connect with you?
Quicksprout.com.
And will you talk a little bit about what QuickSprout is so they know?
It's a blog about marketing and entrepreneurship.
Excellent. Neil, thank you so much. It's been quite an honor, and I've really enjoyed the conversation and getting to know about your lint roller.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.